Hi guys, and welcome to the Tales of an African Princess in America. My name is Ozzy. This month, we're talking all about African weddings. Last week, we spoke a little bit about dating, especially in the African context, like, you know, how African parents feel about dating. And I was able to get some feedback from you guys. a lot of people sent me their comments on Instagram from the poll that I carried out. Only one person said her parents were actually okay with her dating. She was able to date and actually told her parents about it. So the rest said, oh, we dated, but we had to keep it under wraps. It wasn't something that we ever told our parents. And it was only until we were ready to get married that we actually told our parents. That's the case with a lot of Africans. So today we're talking a little bit more about African weddings. And we're moving past dating. We're moving to, so you found the one, you know, what happens from there. And today we're talking about bride price and dowry. So for some context, in most African countries, the man pays the bride price, right? It's a token of appreciation from the groom to the bride's family, you know, to show his love for his bride. And it could be money, it could be goods, it could be services. And because I don't want to always come from the Nigerian perspective, today I have a friend of mine. She's from a different country, and today she'll be telling us a little bit about what the process is in her country. But first, I want to thank you guys for reaching back to me, and thank you for your comments. Remember that this is not an in-depth study about the marriage process. It's just to give you an overview. There are always going to be people out there who are like, oh my goodness, this is not all there is to the culture, and this is not all there is to the practices. But it's just to let you know, if we were to give you a cheat sheet, this would be it. It was just to let you know that this is what happens in most African countries. Now, the details might be different from culture to culture, but it's just an overview, all right? So, welcome and enjoy. So this week we're talking all about African weddings, and today I have one of my friends, Lindile, here to talk about the process of getting married in her culture. Welcome, Lindile.
Hi, Ozzy. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you said, I'm Lindile Mube, and I'm originally from Zimbabwe. I've lived in the U.S. for most of my adult life, I think collectively about 20 years. I was born in Zimbabwe and first moved to the U.S. when I was 5. And then moved back to Zimbabwe and back to the States when I was about 15 or 16, and I've been here ever since.
Wow. Okay, so you've gotten a taste of both cultures.
I have.
And so today you're very qualified to tell us about the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people ask me about the culture, the tradition of what happens when a guy meets a girl. So what is the process of getting married in Zimbabwe? So first, what tribe are you from?
I am Ndebele, which is a derivative of Zulu, mm-hmm. I guess Zulu culture. The Zulu people predominantly from South Africa, mm-hmm. and how we became known as the Ndebele people, where when the Zulu people pretty much trekked north and settled in the southern part of Zimbabwe, and they became known as the Ndebele people. Mm-hmm. And so the languages are very similar, with a few differences in a few words here and there, but we can pretty much understand each other.
Okay. And so do you guys practice arranged marriages?
Not arranged marriages, but we do have the dowry process.
Okay. Kind of walk us through, like, when a guy meets a girl and they know that we like each other and, you know, we would like to spend the rest of our lives together, what is the process? Like, what do they have to do next?
So in terms of the engagement, mm-hmm. and moving, so the family knows that they're dating at this point, and mm-hmm. We don't have a formal engagement. You know, we do practice where the guy, yes, will, you know, get down on one knee and put a ring on, but I don't think that qualifies officially as an engagement. Like, it doesn't really seal the deal.
I think that that's more like a Western.
It's a Western thing. So people have like incorporated it, mm-hmm. now, but I don't think the families really like look at it as something that's official. The right. dowry process, which would be like the traditional wedding, mm-hmm. is what seals the deal. Okay. And some people just stick to the dowry and they're considered married. Mm-hmm. Other people, especially in the Christian environment, will do the dowry process and still live apart. And then they have what you'd call your white wedding. And right. that is where you wear your white dress and your Christian sort of wedding. And that's kind of what they would do. Now, for the dowry process, the guy usually has to approach the girl's family mm-hmm. and ask pretty much, in a sense, for her hand in marriage. But there's several processes for that to happen. He can't just walk into her.
I was about to say that. Like, does he just waltz in there? He pretty much has to come with elders, right?
He has to come with elders because if he walks in there, you know, he could probably be chased away. And the family would probably think he's very, very rude.
Rude, yeah.
And so it's a very delicate process, and he has to be very wise in choosing who he's going to pick to go and represent him.
So who is required to go with him?
Typically, it's your uncles. It's mm-hmm. it's a male that's representing your, or a couple males, or two or three males that are representing. He can be there, or, I mean, these days, maybe he's not there, maybe he's in a different country, but mm-hmm. you do send your family members that you trust mm-hmm. to go to the girl's family. Mm-hmm. Typically, you don't call the family and say, hey, we want to come talk to you. What usually happens wow. is the girl tips off her family. Mm-hmm. And usually it's an aunt. She's okay. like, oh, hey, I have a special friend that wants
special
to come.
Friend. Yeah. I see, last week I talked about how African parents are really strict about these mm-hmm. things. And there's really never that conversation for a lot of people, not everyone. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, they never had that conversation with their parents. Mm-hmm. So it's always like a special friend or, right. you know, and I right. think they get it when you say stuff like that.
They get mm-hmm. it. They get it. And, you know, they get it. I'm like, oh, it's time. And mm-hmm. usually the aunt might ask more questions and then she might sneak away and go tell the mom and just say, yeah, you know, right. it's time. You expect visitors. Mm-hmm. And then that arrangement is made. And usually they'll start asking the girl, you know, kind of what does he do? And just to kind of get an idea mm-hmm, of, mm-hmm. you know, what to expect.
Right.
Typically, I think it's the girl's responsibility to kind of, like, for example, like if you know your I guess your loved one or your right. boyfriend. Or
let's just call it what it is. Your lover.
Your lover. A significant so other. Your significant other. Maybe, you know, maybe they don't have that much money. So mm-hmm. a lot of times the girl will kind of like, oh, auntie, don't be too hard and right. this. So you just mm-hmm. try and soften that environment. And when the family says, okay, you know, would like to meet this guy. Mm-hmm. They pretty much set a date. Mm-hmm. And
so is it just one visit and then
it can be okay. It can be one visit. Everything mm-hmm. can be done in one visit, but typically it might be two mm-hmm. visits, but it could be one visit, but it has several steps, several okay. processes.
So kind of walk us through the steps.
Okay. The guy, her significant other, has, mm-hmm. you know, picked the males that he feels comfortable that they can, you want males that can negotiate very well.
Okay.
As well. That's very important.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they have to be able, well-spoken, mm-hmm. Respectable people as well.
So when you say respectable people, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Somebody who has a you know, dignified, respected, mm-hmm. has a level of authority
morals
and that sort of thing. And so you want to make sure you have that and, you know, they can negotiate. And mm-hmm. so you obviously you dress up usually, you know, in suits,
right.
you know, or.
And what is the language during these meetings? Like, is it like in English or it's in the traditional language?
I think it could be a little bit of both. It depends on the families mm-hmm. as well and the comfort level.
Okay.
So I've seen it can be a mixture of both. And I think, I mean, being bilingual, I mean, you're bilingual as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we just mix English and our vernacular languages.
Okay.
Quite frequently. So that, and it all depends. If it was maybe in a rural setting, it might just all be in vernacular.
Okay. Okay. So they get to the house. Is there like a comfortable number of people that he should show up with? Or, cause you know how mm-hmm. sometimes you're going to someone's house and you can't take a crowd.
Mm-hmm. It's not a crowd. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a large crowd, maybe like maybe your group of four or five, you know, it's just a handful of people. I would think definitely less than 10. And so they would get there. And sometimes there's a little bit of teasing where the family's like, oh, we don't know you. So, and this part of the process, they would call Ugu Vela. And this is, you're coming there to make yourself known to the girl's family. That is your primary responsibility to for them to get to know who you are.
Okay.
And so that's where you go with your delegation, which are your go-betweens. And the guy cannot speak.
He is not allowed to open his mouth. Igbo culture in Nigeria. Like, the whole time the guy is there, he's not allowed to speak.
Quiet.
It's just the elders who kind of like talk about what they're there for. Yeah, but go ahead.
Which is why you want people who can really speak for you in a sense. So that's, so he's quiet, pretty, just as humble as he can be. And so, and then, you know, they would let you in, and sometimes they could ask, you know, for just a little bit of, you know, like of a gift. It could be money. It's a small token of appreciation to even start the dialogue.
It begins. Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, you have to show, okay, you want us to talk about this, you know, it's just, something small, like I said, there could be some teasing involved, like, oh, we don't know you. What are you doing here? And sometimes, you know, it can get pretty, I don't know, a little, you know.
Awkward?
Not awkward. Well, awkward maybe for the guy, you know.
Definitely.
Because sometimes, yeah, they, I'm sure they
take the teasing to a new level.
To a new level. And in a lot of ways, I think it's to see how serious this person. Can you, you know, are you going to maintain your composure?
Right.
And that sort
Can
of
you
stuff.
Take a joke?
Can you take a joke? And, you know, they're watching you.
Right. There's something that they do in the Igbo culture in Nigeria. I always say Igbo because I'm Igbo. And that's what I know. So the elders, they never really speak directly. They use like proverbs and so they say stuff like, we've seen a beautiful flower in your house and we've come to pluck it. Things like that. Like, is that how they speak?
Yes, they would say stuff like that.
Okay.
They would say
cheesy stuff
like that. it's like, can you get to the point?
I feel like that's the African way of being cheesy.
They beat around the bush. And it's like, you have to kind of understand all the nuances and kind of understand where they're get where you know what they're getting at. And usually, you know, at this point the girl's not there.
Okay.
Yeah. So then they will call her.
She's probably hiding somewhere.
She's probably
nearby,
hiding,
listening.
And it's a big thing. She's nervous, and it's like, oh, are they going to give him a hard time? And that, and sometimes, you know, she would be maybe with her siblings, like, or your, no, your, I guess your sisters or something like that. And I remember with my my cousin, what they had us do, they will call the girl. And so the girl will come and she'll sit on the floor, maybe with the sisters and stuff like that. And they're like, okay, so there are several girls here.
Which one of them?
Which one of them do you have your eye on? That sort of thing.
Okay.
And, you know, or they'll ask the girls, I'm like, oh, do you know this fellow? Mm-hmm. You know, that there's also a bit of cheesing, you know, there as well. But eventually, you know, he identifies his girl and he says, you know, yeah, this is, I think that is maybe the only time he can talk probably and just say, yeah, this is the girl
that I'm here for.
Yes. When I said Ugu Vela, which was to make yourself known.
Okay.
That's when he arrives. But to initiate the dialogue, they, what they call it in my language is Isi Vulam Lomo, literally to, at least the way I would interpret it, to the
opening of the mouth.
Something like that. Literal translation. So, and this, you know, this is really a gift. You have to pay it right there.
Wow.
And otherwise nothing.
So is this
forward.
Set in stone, or is anything that you have? Basically.
It's not pretty. It's not really set in stone. It could be goat, or it's, you know, something definitely that has a monetary value. So it's not going to be cows at this point, or that large amount, you know, that you'd pay for like a cow. It could be a goat or a small amount of money.
Okay.
Which could be maybe a few $100s, I don't know, something like that. And so that's pretty much what happens at that point. And then the negotiating is what they call gangaziwe. And so that one, you know, you pay maybe a cow at that point in time.
Okay.
You would give, let's say, the mother or the father, usually like a item of clothing, like a jacket or overcoat, and maybe a blanket for the grandmother, grandfather, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where the lobola negotiation.
Okay, so back to your explanation. Mm-hmm. You were saying that at this point, the family of the girl presents a list of things that the man has to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then they start negotiating right there?
Because the first one is you give a small gift that... And usually it's what you bring, you decide, and you have to be realistic. I mean, you're not going to bring $10 to start the negotiating process. So something of a respectable amount that to say, hey, this is what I've brought. And they could either accept it or they could say, you're probably joking, you need to go away. In extreme cases, I would say that has happened. I'm sure that has taken place, especially maybe if they don't like the guy.
Right.
But usually, you know, they'll accept what the guy has, you know, given, or maybe they'll ask for a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But then once he pays that, the discussions can start, the negotiating can start.
Right.
And so that's where they'll go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Zimbabwe, and I don't know if it's in South Africa as well, Zimbabwe has a set price for... Let's say you're using cows.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say it's $1,500. So,
yes.
You know, market value for a cow might not be $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
It could be $2,000. It could be, you know, those, you know, it'll fluctuate depending on market value.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's always going to be a set price. And that's what the government has done. And that is to, I guess, prevent people from abusing the system.
Wow.
So if it's five cows, you know, it's five cows times maybe $1,500. Each cow is worth $1,500, for example. I'm not so certain what the exact price is, but it's set. So whether you're in the village or in town, wherever you are in the country, it's a set price.
That's really, really good because in other parts of Africa, I'm not going to say just Nigeria, it's not set. For everyone, like two girls might be getting married in the same town, but their bride price is totally different. And that's one thing I was going to ask you is if my bride price is higher than yours, does it mean I'm better than you?
Or
is it a way to rate people?
It can be higher than mine because let's say what they're setting a price is for the individual cow.
Mm-hmm.
So you might get 10 cows. Let's say I might get 5 cows.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask you. Is this a way to rate the girls? Do they expect more for certain girls and then less for certain girls? Or is it by tribe or how does it work?
It's a very difficult question to ask. But I would say yes in a sense where if you find, let's say, a girl is maybe well accomplished, maybe you educated her. For example, let's say she's a doctor, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Some families would be like, you know,
We spent
a lot getting her to this point, and so we're not going to just ask for one or two cows.
Right.
Maybe a girl in the village, you know, maybe they might say maybe you want to, maybe the guy can't even afford a cow.
Right.
So they have to, and also with the cow, they can ask for actual cows, or they can ask for the monetary value of the cow. And then going back, it all depends. Like, I'm sure even in the village, maybe the family wants 10 cows for the girl. So
I think it has to do with how much you can negotiate
How much you can negotiate.
I mean, someone could waltz in there and say, I'm fine with whatever, and they just pay that.
Right.
Or someone could go there and have people really, really say, you know what, this is too much and we can't afford this.
Right.
And so I feel like it also has to do with how much your groom has.
It's how much your groom is. What is he doing? What profession is he in? A lot of times the girl has tipped her family off of kind of what his financial status is.
Right.
If he's a rich man, you're going to expect, you know, a lot higher. And if he's of, you know, maybe humble means, they might, you know, bring that down. And then like I said, there's just so many layers, because what if they don't like this guy?
Right.
And sometimes you find, you know, which could be some of the positive and negative things, where a family might just set a higher price because they just don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have that situation playing out as well.
Hmm.
But I know, like, typically my family, like, their families, especially in the Christian realm, where they're like, okay, well, we don't want to put it too high, but mm-hmm. it's not like we're going to make it low. We're going to make it reasonable.
Right. What are some of the things that are included?
For the lobola would be cows.
Okay.
And
who benefits from this? Is it the family of the, is it the parents of the girl only, or?
Mostly it goes to the parents of the girl, but mm-hmm. it can go to people who helped raise her. If maybe the parents were not there,
mm-hmm.
the grandparents, sometimes there'll be other items, maybe items of clothing, like I mentioned before, that would go to, you know, maybe like the grandparents and that stuff, but it could maybe the uncles
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. But generally most of it will go to the girls.
Okay. I remember like when my sisters got married, there are things on the list that were supposed to be done for my grandparents mm-hmm. who had already passed.
Mm.
But they still had to do those things. Mm. They would all take those items and mm-hmm. take it to the oldest living relative mm-hmm. in, you know, my mm-hmm. grandma's house or where my grandma's from. But they'll still have to do those things. Mm. And so the things that have to be done for like extended family, it's really hard to negotiate on those things.
Mm.
But the things that are for the parents mm-hmm. might say, okay, we don't want to stress you too much. Don't mm-hmm. do this, don't do that.
I think that that's always the tough part, because mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, the immediate family, it might be, okay, it's a simple process.
Right.
We can get this done.
Right.
But you can find that maybe the uncles usually.
Yeah.
They have a lot of authority.
Right.
Even if it's not their child, they have a lot of say.
Influence. Yes.
Influence.
Yes.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
What do you think are some of the benefits of this dowry paying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to someone looking from outside, it seems like they're just trying to rip the groom off. You know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. just trying to make this last payday from this mm-hmm. this girl before mm-hmm. she leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that this system has benefits?
I think that it does if it's done appropriately. Okay. I think culture is important. I think in a lot of ways, the reason why it was done is to, you know, even the whole negotiating process, there is this relationship that starts to be built. And you begin in this whole process of negotiating, you begin to learn each other's families mm-hmm. and how we communicate. And
right.
you begin to know who are the uncles who have a lot of influence and who, you know, you just begin to learn and get a better idea of what type of family your child is going to.
Right.
And so it helps with gaining a little more information on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is good because it helps to know how serious are you with our daughter.
Okay.
Because once that process is done, we become united as mm-hmm. a family. And mm-hmm. and that's where I was going to go, you know, to backtrack a little bit. Once that they've negotiated and they've set a price, he doesn't have to have the amounts there. And that's what you were asking, if it mm-hmm. was done in one day.
Right.
So that part can, the dowry, they can agree on it, and that can be, you know, paid.
And so he can go home and start saving.
Start saving.
I mean,
yeah.
For as long as it takes.
And they might set a date where we want it all, you know, maybe at a certain, you know, time period mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And after that process is done, the guy can really relax at that point.
Okay.
And he can now speak. And mm-hmm. they officially welcome him into the family. And usually they have a big meal
mm-hmm.
and they sit at the table and just share, you know, kind of a bit of a feast. You know, you kill a goat at this point in time.
Right.
In the way I would look at it, that is what we'd call an official engagement. So even if he got down on one knee and you have a ring, at that
matter.
Point, mm-hmm. they now see you as, okay, now it's official.
Okay.
Now we are united as a family. And some people who are maybe not Christians can stay as, you know, traditionally married, and the government will acknowledge that as an actual marriage.
Wow. It's interesting. Back in the day, the parents of the girl had no way of knowing if this groom is mm-hmm. going to be able to take care of the family. Mm-hmm. And by putting these things in place where they say, okay, you have to complete these steps, mm-hmm. it was a way for them to know if he was going to be financially able to take care of the family mm-hmm. and, you know, if he had what it took, I mm-hmm. guess, to take care of his wife mm-hmm. and kids who were going to come later.
It's not supposed to be looked at as your buyer. It's more like mm-hmm. a life insurance policy mm-hmm. in a sense. Because you're ensuring your girl's security when she goes into that home, that this man is serious about
right,
her.
Right.
He's not fooling around. He's serious. He wants to marry her. And there's also that you're presenting this gift, mm-hmm. this sense of appreciation to the girl's family.
For everything,
mm-hmm. for raising her. Because now I am taking her to my side of the family. And mm-hmm. you know what? She's going to have my last name. The children that she bears are going to have the groom's last name.
Right.
So she's basically helping build somebody else's family.
Right.
And not her own because she's changing her name.
Right. And then when we were talking earlier, you said something about back in the day when a girl would get married, she might move so far away from home mm-hmm. that might be the last time that her parents would see yeah. her, or they might not see her in a really long time.
Right.
And they were going to be losing a helper.
You're losing a helper.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then definitely there are people out there who are abusing mm-hmm. this, and people who are, you know, asking for the highest bidder. They try to squeeze as much as they can mm-hmm. from you because, you know, this mm-hmm. it's still a function of people. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends on how good or how bad they are. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's a really good practice. Mm-hmm. Won't you agree? Do you think that it should be abolished?
I don't think it should be abolished. Mm-hmm. I think, like, and as I said before, if it's done accordingly, and I don't think prices should be set so high right. as if it's like you're buying
right.
someone, mm-hmm. because then that could, you know, those are the negative things. Because some guys can, you know, you get in a marriage and something happens, mm-hmm. and maybe he ends up putting his hand on a woman and saying, "Because I bought you,"
right?
And
but
so,
it's never like it's
yeah.
never a transaction because
exactly.
in many cultures you never really finish paying that.
You don't
right?
finish paying mm-hmm. it because it's rude. It comes across it's sort of as, you know, rude where mm-hmm. you're always going to be in debt to the girl's family.
Right.
And I think a lot of times when families suck so much out of the guy, he ends up having that resentment. And
yeah.
then you're putting your daughter's life
at risk. Yeah.
Because then he's going to use that against her right. in a marriage.
So you're from this really beautiful place where you guys kind of talk in clicks.
Yes.
Okay.
And so my last name has a click in mm-hmm. it. And that's the C mm-hmm. is pronounced as... So mm-hmm. you have the tongue at the roof of your mouth and mm-hmm. you just, I don't know how to describe it, but I just know how to do it. But you'd say, if it's an X, mm-hmm. it's... So okay. that's sort of from the side of your tongue.
Right.
And then you've got the Q, which is pronounced as...
So can you tell us something that would have the clicks?
That would have the clicks?
Like a tongue twister?
Maybe I'll do a tongue twister. Mm-hmm. And I always say I have to, like, not have gum in my mouth because you'd spit the gum out when you're saying it. But you would say,
oh, wow.
As a tongue twister, it absolutely means nothing.
But I always find it's it just, amusing when
yeah.
you do that. Like, I try to do it, but I can't. But, yeah.
It takes a little practice. But I always say, don't try so hard. Just let it roll off your tongue.
I had a really hard time actually saying Lindele, right?
Lindele,
I used to
yeah.
say Lindele, but then
it's Lindele.
No, Lindele. Okay, what does Lindele mean?
Lindele, wow. Lindele means, literal translation means waiting.
Okay.
And it's one who's waiting. You know, African names always have
means
a deeper,
deep. Yeah.
a very deeper meaning.
And you know what? I feel like it's so appropriate sometimes because
yeah.
they give you these names when you're a kid, but when
mm-hmm.
you grow up, it's like... Did you grow into the name or
yeah.
you always were that person? You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I've known you for a while. I
yeah.
feel like you're really patient, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely
but
played
I don't
out
know
in
if
my life.
Right. Are you living up to your name or it's just
I
like a prophecy? Like, she's going to be a patient one. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I would say I'm patient in some things.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some areas where I feel like I need to learn more patience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it means waiting. It means also a state of anticipation. So
mm-hmm.
you're looking forward for something. And as I mentioned, I come from a Christian family. Mm. And the reason why they gave that to me was because they were waiting for the second coming of Christ. Mm. And so that's, you know. My mom said if I was a boy, they would have called me Lindani, which means wait.
Mm, that's a really beautiful name. It's a really beautiful name. Okay, guys, we've come to the end of today's episode. We talked about dowry, and we said that if it's done correctly, it's actually beneficial because it, you know, ensures that the girl is going to a home where they can take care of her, and that this relationship, this bond between both families is formed. The most important thing is that we respect each other's culture, and everything should be done in moderation. Right?
I would say that I've sort of grown into it because I think living in America, I say, like, you know, I've got this dual culture. Lobola Odari just sort of brings, you know, there's the Western side of me, there's the African side of me. And growing up, I remember thinking as a girl, I don't want that. You know, I just, you know, because I was still sort of coming into myself and learning. And I'm like, well, I don't want somebody paying for me. But I didn't really fully understand
girl power.
It. Girl power and all of that. But I think now that I'm much older, I've kind of like, you know, it's not bad. It's actually a beautiful thing. And it also sets a tone of how important you are.
So that
when you go there, you're like, you know, you establish a level of respect.
And there are some girls who go ahead, like some couples, pretty much, they don't do all this. You know, they live in the city and they go ahead and start living together. But there's that thing you said about respect. It's like they don't get as much respect as people who actually marry the proper way. So yeah, it does make sense. All right, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm glad.
Really appreciate your presence and your contributions. Priceless. All right, guys, thank you for listening and have a great day.
Do you know that you can support this podcast with a small monthly contribution, as little as $1 every month? If you'd like to do so, please visit our website at www.talesofanafricanprincessinamerica.com. Thank you.